Die Presse.
The EU should also, I think, put it on the table that if Russia gets Ukraine, the likelihood that he will take Moldova or part of it is 100%.
Moldova enjoys peace today thanks to Ukraine. Mm. That's very clear. I have no doubt that if the Russian army would have been allowed to get to our border, that they will not stop that. It's one thing to be in Moldova and to see the Shaheds falling in the yards of our people. And it's another thing to be, you know, pretty far, and then Russia is far, and it's more difficult to focus.
Vielleicht haben Sie es schon mitbekommen, die Presse am Sonntag wird in diesen Tagen tatsächlich schon 17 Jahre alt. Und wie immer im März begehen wir den Geburtstag mit einer besonderen Ausgabe und mit einem prominenten Gastchefredakteur. Diesmal ist das Andreas Treichl, der Vorstand der Erste Stiftung und der ehemalige langjährige CEO der Erste Group. Er hat mit uns wochenlang an dieser Jubiläumszeitung gearbeitet. Das Generalthema lautet Rettet Europa. Und auch deshalb haben wir in der Redaktion für Treichl, aber natürlich auch für Sie, die Europa-Hymne eingesungen.
Eine schöne
Götterfunken,
Tochter aus Elysium, wir betreten
feiertrunken,
himmlische dein
Heiligtum.
Der Chor war äußerst gut besetzt, vom CEO der Presse und der Feuilletonchefin bis zum Vize-Chefredakteur und der Chefassistenz. Das Video können Sie auf YouTube und allen unseren Kanälen finden, wenn Sie jetzt neugierig geworden sind. Und Treichl hat auch selbst GesprächspartnerInnen aufgetrieben und zum Interview getroffen. Darunter war etwa Maya Sandu. Sie ist seit 2020 Präsidentin der Republik Moldau. Im Gespräch mit Treichl und Christian Ult, dem stellvertretenden Chefredakteur der Presse, in unserem Videostudio, erklärt Sandu die äußerst schwierige Lage ihres Landes zwischen einem Kriegsschauplatz und einer ungewissen EU-Zukunft. Sie spricht offen über russische Wahleinmischung, illegale Truppen auf moldauischem Boden und darüber, was ein russischer Sieg in der Ukraine für ihr Land und für ganz Europa bedeuten würde. Das komplette Gespräch hören Sie nun hier in diesem Podcast. Sie können das übrigens auch nachschauen auf unseren Kanälen auf YouTube und auf unserer Webseite. Das Interview wurde auf Englisch geführt. Die deutsche Fassung des Gesprächs lesen Sie auf der ersten Doppelseite in der Jubiläumsausgabe vom 29. März, die Sie keinesfalls verpassen sollten. Infos zur Ausgabe und die Links zum Abo finden Sie in den Shownotes. Viel Vergnügen.
It's really a pleasure to have you here. Wonderful that you come by, and thanks for setting it up. Madam President, I would like to begin with the question. What is it like for a small democracy, a democracy in a small country like Moldova, being situated where it is situated, what it is like in geopolitical times like this, where might makes right again, to survive as a democracy?
It's not easy. And even before the geopolitical events started to unfold the way they're unfolding, we knew that it's difficult for a small and still fragile democracy to survive alone. That's why we're so committed to the EU integration of Moldova. And now it's just becoming more and more complicated, and it's more and more important for us to move fast to fulfill all the commitments we have towards EU, hoping that EU will also fulfill its commitments towards Moldova, towards other candidate countries, so that we could become part of a bigger family where we're going to feel safer.
Andreas Treichl, do you have the feeling that aside of lofty declarations, it is understood by European, and particularly Austrian politicians and citizens, that the times are changing dramatically?
No, I think it's not. It's not understood. And I think that we have not a very clearly defined path for Europe and the European Union. And we have not, as Europe, yet decided what is the scope of the union that we want to have, and what's the difference between Europe and the European Union. And I think Moldova is in a very particular situation, not in a very good situation. Its big neighbor is being attacked by Russia. And the only other country that is in the region, which is definitely part of Europe, is Belarus. And that's not being even talked about by Europe, because that's clearly in the sphere of Russian influence. So for Moldova and for the president of Moldova, a very, very, very difficult situation that, in my view, would need a much clearer commitment on part of the European Union to say, well, Moldova is part of Europe and it will be part of the Union one day, in whichever way. And what the country presently needs is dramatic economic support. And that's, I mean, it's nice what's being done, but there could be much more.
Mrs. President, I wonder, what is your view on this idea of the so-called zone of influence? Because we can hear it not only from Moscow these days, but also in Washington. So what comes up in your mind if you hear this term?
Well, we have experienced it before. It's not a new notion for us. Moldova was denied its independence before, during the Soviet Union, and after the Soviet Union, Russia has been done everything it could to keep us in a gray zone, which is the same, like a buffer zone. And this is not good. We know what it meant. That's why we want to be part of the free world. We don't want Russia to use Moldova against the free world, against the EU, as it is happening today with Belarus. So when we talk about the EU integration, it's not only about the safety of Moldova, it's also about the security for the EU, because if countries like Moldova are not helped to become part of the EU, then these countries might be used by Russia against against the continent.
Let's talk about this EU succession a little bit later. I wonder what would be the consequences. I mean, it's a hypothetical question, of course, but what would be the consequence for Europe and Moldova in particular, if Putin gets his way in Ukraine and wins?
This is putting in danger the peace on the continent, because if he's not stopped in Ukraine, and Ukraine has been very brave and resilient, but it needs the support of other countries. And if Russia is not stopped in Ukraine, then peace is going to be in danger, not only in Europe, but in other parts of the world as well.
Right. But I think it's pretty simple. You just have to look at the situation right now. We talked about Belarus. It's clear what's going on there. If Putin gets Ukraine, Moldova presently is encompassed by Ukraine and Romania. The eastern part of Moldova is Transnistria. So if Putin gets Ukraine, what's going to happen next? It's totally, totally logic, and it will happen. So I think looking forward, the EU should also, I think, put it on the table that if Russia gets Ukraine, the likelihood that he will take Moldova or part of it is 100%.
And not just Moldova. It's all the countries in the region are in danger.
So for you, it must feel somehow as a race against time. I mean, you have this aim to become a member of the European Union by 2030. And, well, that's not a long time, is it?
We made a commitment to make the country ready by 2030. Of course, we can't make the decisions on behalf of the EU member states and EU institutions. but we can deliver. And the latest report by the EU, by the Commission, showed that Moldova has made very good progress. Actually, they called us the best student among the candidate countries. We still have issues to work on, but we really believe that in the next 2 years, we can really achieve great progress and make the country ready.
I mean, there's a lot of support by the European Union, as far as I get it. But what is your take, Mr. Traigl? Is it enough support? Is Europe doing enough for a country like Moldova right now?
Well, I think it has to take a clear decision. And that decision has to be based on what I said before, on what does Europe want? I mean, let's assume Russia takes Ukraine, then the path is very clear. Let's assume the other thing happens and Russia does not take Ukraine. Then you will have a lot of money pouring into Ukraine. Living standards in the Ukraine will go up. Romania is on a pretty good path. Moldova is between Ukraine and Romania. And what happened to Slovenia, which is pretty much the same size as Moldova, why shouldn't that happen to Moldova too? And if we have peace, and if Ukraine stays with Europe, and the economies in the region develop as they could, Moldova will benefit dramatically. So the choice for Europe and for Moldova is very clear.
Actually, I'm confident that Ukraine will resist. It is very difficult for them, but from what we have seen until now, and from what we, you know, from talking to the people there, I'm actually confident that Ukraine will resist. Of course, the fact that bringing peace takes longer, the costs are also high. First of all, the human costs in Ukraine, but also the economic costs. So it is in the interest of everyone that Ukraine prevails, that Putin is stopped, and this will also mean lower costs for Europe and for the other countries which are helping now.
But you would agree if I said somehow the fate of Moldova is intertwined with Ukraine's, right?
Moldova enjoys peace today thanks to Ukraine. That's very clear. I have no doubt that if the Russian army would have been allowed to get to our border, that they will not stop there.
You think that that was the original plan to build some sort of a land corridor to bridge Russia with Transnistria and Moldova?
Yeah, that was part of the plan, because it's clear that Russia's plan is broader. It's an imperialistic plan. So yes, at some point we saw some of the Russian military people showing the maps. Because they were hoping to be in Odessa and Mykolaiv in Odessa, and then come to our border. And you know, there is still a number of Russian troops who are stationing illegally on Moldova's territory in the Transnistrian region. There are some weapons there from the Soviet times. We don't know whether they're functional or not, but it's clear that they would have tried to get there to take the weapons.
Moldova is a neutral country, just like Austria. Do you think that neutrality in any way protects Moldova?
Well, when some countries do not respect the international rules-based order, when some countries don't respect the borders recognized internationally, why would they start reading the Moldovan constitution? I'm talking about aggressors and be stopped by a provision in the Moldovan constitution. I do understand that this won't stop the aggressor, but this is the choice of the Moldovan people. So we respect this choice. This is what we have enshrined in our constitution. And we're trying to improve the defense within the limits of the constitution. We've been increasing the budget for defense.
But it's still rather small compared to other countries, of course.
Yes,
in terms of percentage of GDP,
it
think
is.
It's around 1%.
But we have increased it a lot since we came to power. It hasn't been easy because Moldova has been affected significantly by the energy crisis. The war next door has been having significant implications on our economy. So given the realities on the ground, we actually managed to increase the budget, and we have this commitment to further increase it. This is the new reality. The most important commitment of the state towards its citizens is to keep them safe. And that's what we will do.
Do you think that European Union in itself offers some kind of protection for member countries?
Not enough, but of course it does. I mean, it's a completely different story whether you're part of the European Union or not. So when you look at the future, no matter on how the conflict with Ukraine now ends, and you look at the aggression of Russia and you believe it will never change. I hope that Russia will change and become a rule-based country that respects the borders of its neighbors. But as long as that is not the case, I would not feel extremely comfortable being in Estonia or Lithuania right now, and they do not feel extremely comfortable. But I think they can feel a lot more comfortable for the moment than Moldova for the moment. So yes, of course, it makes a difference.
Which?
EU is actually helping us on defense as well. They have now this European Peace Facility mechanism, and Moldova has benefited from support. We have been using this especially for air surveillance because we have the Russian drones flying over Moldova, unfortunately. So the EU is thinking more and is doing more now on defense. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not a military alliance, but it's still better, and you do feel more protected. Just by being part of a bigger family already makes you less vulnerable. This is already a sign to the aggressor.
I see. Because you've mentioned it, do you believe that Russia could return to a path towards democracy and could become a partner again?
What do you mean by return?
When last time Russia was a democracy?
There was a time when it at least seemed that Russia is heading towards democracy under Yeltsin in the 90s. But yeah. Do you believe
that? It's difficult for me to imagine something like that. And I do acknowledge that there are many Russian people who do value democracy and freedom. But if you look at what's happening in the country, I don't see this happening.
I think it is possible. It simply depends on the development of prosperity and the distribution of prosperity in the country, which is extremely bad in Russia. But I think the basis for a peaceful, open Russia, whether it's a full democracy or not, that's a different story, is Europe, actually. If Europe, or the EU, or Europe, however you define it, would be able to defend itself or to deter Russia alone as Europe without any outside help, that is the basis for a peaceful together between Russia and Europe. That needs to be established. That's key for it. If Russia knows this is Europe, this is us, and the borders are fixed, then we can start living in peace with Russia. And until we don't have that, until we depend on the United States or somebody else and need to their help in order to put at par the military strengths between Russia and Europe, we're never going to have peace. We need to do that as Europe, then we will have peace.
Let us return to the European Union accession process. I mean, you have touched it already, but if you put it in a nutshell, what is the main driver for Moldova to become a member of the European Union? What do you expect?
We want to be part of the family. For us, it's important, you know, to have the document. We already have a million of Moldovans who are EU citizens. So, and 1 million out of 2.5,
you mean
or
the
maybe
ones
some
who have a Romanian passport.
That's the Romanian citizenship. So we actually do. Almost half of our citizens have already the EU citizenship. It's now for the country, you know, to get the certificate. It is about security. It is about democracy. It's about the chance to continue to develop as a democratic country. We have seen what Russia has done to us in the last 2 years when we had the referendum, the presidential elections, the parliamentary elections, the hybrid war that we have experienced is unprecedented, even though it's not news for us. But Russia spent a lot of money, hundreds of millions of euros, just to interfere with our elections. Because Russia wanted to have control, to get control over the people who run the country. And then to use Moldova as Kremlin wants for the benefit of Kremlin and not for the benefit of
Moldova. What will Russia do to prevent Moldova to become a member of the European Union?
So like everything they could. When we had the referendum on EU integration, they invested a lot. They did a lot of disinformation and manipulation just to frighten the Moldovans and to tell them that if you vote for the, this was the main narrative, if you vote for the EU integration, then what is happening today to Ukraine is going to happen tomorrow to Moldova, just to scare people with the war. They've been financing illegally political parties, of course, a lot of manipulation online and through the press, cyber attacks, a lot of types of interferences, just not to have the Moldovans decide in favor of the EU integration. Then, you know, like every day the campaign against EU, that EU is bad. Every day the campaign against Moldova's EU integration. The campaign is that EU wants to use Moldova, that EU is using now Ukraine against Russia, and EU wants to do the same with Moldova. EU wants to use Moldova against Russia. So the false narratives mainly, but in addition to that, as I said, money to pay to politicians.
What would be the added value for the European Union of Moldova's membership?
Well, look, it's a small country. But you shouldn't underestimate the effect of having an additional country that can create wealth for itself and in the future also for the union. And, you know, I mean, what was the value of the Baltics joining the European Union? It was tremendous. Imagine Moldova would be in the economic state that one of the Baltic countries is in. Would be a wonderful addition. And I think it's a principle decision. Moldova is part of Europe. It belongs to the Union, and we need to take that decision at one point in time. We should not think about how much more complicated the Union got because we now have 27 members. That's already so many that it will remain complicated. And if you add a few more, like Moldova or the Western Balkans, it's going to be a bit more complicated. But the values of Europe and the economic strengths of Europe can benefit.
Do you think that Europe should change its rules before it enlarges itself again?
It should have changed its rules already before.
I mean, the decision-making process is and a, so on. What's a, your take a, on it?
It has nothing to do with democracy anymore. That's the dictatorship of the minority, what we have in Europe for the moment. That's that has to be done away with.
I think in this new world where things are changing so quickly, EU needs to have the capacity to take decisions quickly. So I do believe that the decision-making process needs to be functional, and for the EU to be efficient, it should be in the position to take the decisions quickly, because the situation is very volatile. You know, you read one thing tomorrow on your internet, I mean on the internet, and then by the end of the day, things might change tremendously.
But would you cancel the unanimity rule altogether in the European Union?
Yeah. We're not part of the EU, yes, so, you know, it's easier for us. But I actually believe that this is a solution.
Mm-hmm.
I do understand that there are some countries which have some problems with that.
The small countries, for
especially
instance.
The small countries. But I believe that the benefit of quicker solutions are bigger than the benefit of the veto power, which can become a big problem for all the countries.
What's your take on it?
I would put away with it totally. Hmm? If we don't do that, no chance.
Hmm.
And we have to introduce, like you have it in all national parliaments, majority rules. 50%, 2/3, 75%, that I'm all for it. That has to be very well defined. But 100%, never. No democracy in the world can work, and no union in the world can work. If you have more than three members, you need majority. You need the majority rules. Period.
And you have somehow a perspective on the European Union until 2030 from the outside. And I would be interested to hear from you. Where do you see currently the weaknesses of the European Union, the vulnerabilities of it?
I'm not going to criticize the EU. I need
you can help us to get better.
Well, it's about competitiveness, of course. EU is the best place in the world. That's why so many of us, the candidate countries, want to become part of the EU. Probably, and I don't want to sound disrespectful, but probably many of the EU citizens don't feel it anymore, like the benefits of the EU. Mm-hmm. But try to take them these benefits away for a week, mm-hmm. And then people will realize what they will be missing if you would not be there. But it's clear that the world is changing so quickly. Mm-hmm. So the competitiveness, maybe we need to look into our policies and see how we can help businesses grow, change, and compete better, because the economy is a very important element of the democracy as well. I mean, you really can't sustain support for democracy for a long time if you don't also deliver on economic development.
What about you? The biggest vulnerabilities of Europe right now?
The biggest vulnerability of Europe is that we have started a lot of things and we have not completed them.
Mm.
And no construction works well, neither in the political world nor in the corporate world, if you don't complete it. And we haven't done that. The problem that we have, there is nothing else like that in the world. European Union is the only union of states anywhere in the world. And we try to build something which nobody else has yet achieved anywhere in the world, a union of independent states.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully agree with you. One of the best things that we could do is take everything away for a year, close the borders, and let the people feel what it means to live in a non-union, where you're back to 1950.
Mm-hmm. A risky experiment, though. and to put it from the other side, what are the biggest strengths of Europe? Where do you see the biggest strengths of the European Union?
Well, it's about democracy. I think the EU is the safest place for democracy, for human rights, and that's why we want to be part of the EU. Is the single market? It's a lot when in this new world. When the big powers are trying to, you know, to change the rules of the game for small and middle-sized countries, the union is the only solution.
Would you agree? I mean, we all see also authoritarian tendencies inside the European Union. Look at Hungary, for instance, or also other cases.
Yeah, but look, I mean, things like that happen. That's one of the issues of democracy. If you live a true democracy, you have to accept that the elections are being won by political movements that have a different view on democracy. You have to let them in. It happened in the Netherlands too, and after a while, they're out. It's the combination of the creation of prosperity and the distribution of prosperity that is so wonderful in Europe. You do not necessarily need democracy to create wealth. There are a lot of states in the world that are everything but democratic and are incredibly wealthy. It is the distribution of wealth and the fact that we have built societies that have a social fabric that is substantially better than anywhere else in the world, other than Australia and parts like that, a few countries, or Canada. And that is that's the beauty of Europe. And that's why we have social peace and a much better distribution of resources and prosperity and wealth than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
And for that, you need democracy and wealth creation for everybody. That's what the European Union has to offer.
If you look at it, what kind of European Union would you to envisage, let's say, in about 5 or 7 years time? How should it change? What would be the perfect European Union in about 5 or 7 years? I know that's
nothing 1 is billion, perfect. Well, it should be bigger for sure. It should be a serious player around in the world. It should be strong enough, including in terms of defense, because it's clear that the next years or maybe decades are not going to be easy and peace is going to be challenged. Economically strong. So it's the EU that we know now. It's just that a bit bigger and a bit stronger.
I think at one point in time, it should encompass all European states. Mm-hmm. All these states together need to form a strategic alliance that makes Europe so strong that nobody will ever dare to move a 1 centimeter into Europe, so that the borders of Europe are totally fixed. And we need to establish a European Union that is a lot more entrepreneurial and somewhat less fixed on regulation than it presently is. We have not found the right balance. I'm very, very happy that we have good and tough regulation in Europe. But for the moment, I think the prosperity of Europe is much better served by a lot more economic activity and freedom and even more regulation. And we need to have a Europe that has the best and most well-functioning distribution of wealth in the world. That is what actually keeps Europe safe and at peace. Europe should be a place that everybody else wants to be in. Europe is then really successful.
There is a tendency that a lot of people want to move
it
here.
It has to have the same borders.
Yes, but where should Europe end? I mean, you've touched this in your remarks before. Where should the border be drawn of Europe? Is that even possible?
There is one part of Europe where you have geographical disputes. Is Georgia, Armenia, are those countries part of Europe or not? That's something that we need to solve at some point in time. But the rest is very clear. Iceland is part of Europe. Norway is part of Europe. Moldova is part of Europe. Ukraine is part of Europe. Belarus has to decide on its own whether they want to be in Europe or in Russia. We should not interfere in that, and we should not do it by force. Let them decide themselves. If they want to be part of Russia, let them be part of Russia.
Do you think that the European Union in the end will take Moldova in, even if the Transnistria problem is not solved by them? I'm asking you because Europe has also had some bad experience with taking in countries with borders like Cyprus, for instance. It's really causing a headache now for several years. So would you expect that this won't matter at all, or
the main impediment to the reintegration of the country, the reintegration of the Transnistrian region, is the illegal presence of the Russian troops.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Russia from the beginning provoked this conflict and supported all the Siad regime just to keep Moldova in its sphere of influence and not allow it to choose Europe. We are doing our best to solve the conflict. We want to solve it peacefully. So this is one of the main conditionalities. We do hope that a geopolitical opportunity might emerge sooner than later for us to be able to see the withdrawal of the Russian troops. But at the same time, I hope EU is going to be flexible enough, including for an option of integration, Moldova's integration in two steps. Because if the the solution of the transition conflict is the main conditionality, then of course Putin can use it against the entire Moldova.
Recently, in a talk in a podcast, The Rest is Politics, you answered a question. I think it was hypothetical that in a referendum on uniting Moldova with Romania, you would vote in favor. Do you think that this is a realistic scenario, or in under which circumstances would you agree to such a unification?
I want my country to be safe. And I see that the external environment is getting more and more dangerous. The realistic scenario today is the EU integration. We do have a majority of people, of Moldovans, who want Moldova to be part of the EU. For the unification with Romania, we don't have a majority, even though there is a substantial part of the society. Between 35% and 40%, and it's been like that since independence. But this is not the majority, and we take decisions democratically. So we continue with the plan, which is about bringing Moldova into the EU, and we do hope that EU is also going to find solutions. For instance, today Moldova has not been able to open formally the negotiations on several clusters. Not because it's our fault, but because, you know, one of the member states does not agree to open formally the negotiations with Ukraine. And because of that, we can't, you know, move to the next step, even though we continue to work on all the reform agenda, but formally the process hasn't started. And it's up to the EU to find the solutions to the formal to open formally the negotiations, and we do hope that EU will find a solution. So we do believe in the EU integration, but there are discussions, of course. How do we keep Moldova safe? We have to consider all the options, but the options have to be chosen democratically by a majority. So that's the discussion.
I find it interesting that obviously for you the nation state is not that important in the end.
Let's remember history. Remember Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact. Moldova was part of the bigger Moldova, which now is in Romania, and it was part of Romania because this is how it happened. So, and then the Ribbentrop-Molotov Pact, signed in 1939, decided that Soviet Union, Stalin wanted a portion of Moldova, which was part of Romania, to become part of the Soviet Union. So, you know, it's about history here.
So in the end, but this is would be some sort of a plan B for you, right?
I think it was a very parental remark.
We have to think of all the possibilities to keep our country part of the free world. This is the most important thing for us, to keep it peaceful and to keep it part of the free world.
I think it was a very brave remark. I could think of regions where if the head of state says something like that, you get slaughtered because
of that. It's in our constitution that we can have a referendum on that. Yeah. And of course, it's the choice of the people. So the constitution says that such a discussion can happen. And if the majority of people would choose that, this can happen.
Imagine you would have a referendum like that in Slovenia with Croatia.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's, I found it very interesting. Yeah? I mean, you as the president brought up this issue. So
may I say something? I think this...
I just gave an honest answer. Yes, it was and good. It's not for the first time that I answered this question.
To me, this remark just showed you how incredibly worried you are and that your biggest interest is the safety of the people in Moldova, and what
this
you simply said, that if that safety can't be achieved alone, I'd rather do something else.
We hope EU is going to answer our plea and Moldova will become part of the EU sooner than later.
One last question. I know that your time is tight. As a president, you also travel around pretty often. I don't know whether you have been in Spain or Portugal or Southern Europe recently. But of course, there's a different sort, not even remotely as intense of solidarity in, let's say, Spain and Portugal than in Poland, for instance, or Romania, with Moldova. Do you have the feeling that somehow solidarity is determined by geography in the European Union?
Well, I do believe that in our region, countries which had their experiences with Russia in the past, they understand it better, what's at stake and how dangerous this is. And even not only with respect to Moldova, even with respect to what Russia is doing in Ukraine. It's one thing to be in Moldova and to see the shaheds falling in the yards of our people. And it's another thing to be, you know, pretty far and then Russia is far and it's more difficult to focus. So it is not easy to pass these messages, including the message on the need to invest more in defense. Of course, the first reaction of people would be, we need better living standards. Why should we invest in defense? But unless you are protected from the drones and so on, you're not going to be able to enjoy your social benefits and so on. So we have to continue to work, to promote our country. We do have a diaspora, a pretty big diaspora in Spain. We had a bigger, now a smaller diaspora in Portugal. And I have to say that, we had very good relations and I do hope that people there will support Moldova's integration.
Last question to both of you. You have campaigned for the European Union and you will campaign for the accession. What is your advice somehow? How can people, citizens, be brought to identify themselves more with the European Union than they do?
Well, Moldovans are Europeans. They've been always Europeans. It's just that history hasn't been nice to us. When it comes to values, this is how we feel and this is how we live the same values. Again, we have 1 million Moldovans abroad. Most of them are in the European countries. So they know it. Probably every single family has somebody who has worked or is continues to work in the European countries. There is a lot of Russian propaganda, which is trying to frighten people, to scare people. And this is where we need to do better. At, uncovering these attempts by Russia to portray EU as the evil, because this is what Russia is trying to do. But otherwise, also the EU needs to communicate a bit more in simple ways, not technical, because EU has been helping Moldova even before. But if the communication about this support and this about these projects is too technical, then it doesn't reach the people. While Russia's propaganda, you know, they're very good at putting their messages in a way that it gets to people. And this is basically to scare people, because Russia's propaganda is EU means you'll have no traditions. EU means that all that is your Moldovans is going to disappear. And then we have to remind people, it was during the Soviet times that we could not speak our native language, the Romanian. Look at the EU. Moldova is not yet there, and the Romanian language is already an official language of the EU. So you have to bring the and remind people of the realities.
Andreas, what is your take? How to create a more positive, pro-European vibe?
Look, it's a fact that people get used to the benefits of a union. We now have within the union 80 years of peace. Everybody takes that for granted.
That's true.
Every country that has joined the European Union has made progress in its economic situation. So all the people have benefited and prosperity has increased. Some have not. And even that increase in prosperity is now being taken for granted. So it's very difficult to up and up and up and up. But now we're falling behind in many aspects to other regions of the world. So Europe needs a push that make people believe again that the Union offers them a better life than they have as a nation state. And if the European Union isn't able to supply that, the popularity of the EU will not increase. People have to feel the value, not only read about it. They have to feel it.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. Thank you for this wonderful interview. Thank you.